I am Steph Reed. I am the director of the Flat River Community Library.
Amanda Lee, the director of Macomb Marine Council and Courageous Citizen.
I'm State Representative Pat Altman. I represent the 91st District.
Welcome to the Flat River Front Porch. Hi, I'm back with one of our fan favorites here.
Oh boy.
No, seriously, like one of the, I mean, in all fairness, I also paired you with Brian Bloomstrom and he may have been more of a draw, but we're not going to look at it that way. We're going to look at it as everybody in this community is obsessed with you personally.
Oh yes.
I always forget to introduce myself. I hope at this point you know who I am because I do this every time. So let's keep up, people. But I'm here today with
Amanda Lee, the director of Macomb Marine Council.
There we go.
And Courageous Citizen.
Yes. Do-gooder and crusader. Absolutely. Yeah. We can say up front that I apparently kidnapped you from your office.
I was minding my own business in my office. And all of a sudden, there was a knock at the door and the sound of wind pants. And I knew it was over.
I'm wearing pants today that make that swish swish sound. Yes. And that zip off at the knee for shorts related emergencies, apparently. I've never fully understood what the value is in having pants that zip away like that.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, but like, what do you do with the bottom half when, like, where does it go?
It'd be cool if you could make it into like a canteen or something. Folks are like, get the
you can drink water out. My brain is going to that episode of The Office where Michael was being Survivor Man and he like cuts his suit apart in order to like fashion a neckerchief and stuff like that. Yeah, and then it gets cold and he has to put it back together.
I miss The Office.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I enjoyed The Office, but like it needed to end.
And I agree. Badly. A lot of things need to end and they just kind of linger.
They do. But I did not kidnap you. I want to make this
clear.
Okay,
yeah, there's no...
I asked you to do it sometime in the next couple of days and you were full of excuses as to why you had to do it immediately.
They are very valid. They are...
I mean, they're partially valid. They're valid if you are someone who gets anxiety over things like letting your cleaner know that your house was not clean to begin with.
Well, it's not. It's someone coming to my house to deal with my dogs. Mm-hmm. Will this air after spring break?
I'm going to aim for next week.
Okay. So we got to be careful about that. I don't want people to know my house is unattended.
Okay. Your house, there will be somebody there, with a shotgun the whole time.
Yes, there will be.
But we'll tell you what her address is, but we will make sure that you know that it's very well secured.
But I really want to get the dog areas clean and like make sure that no one thinks I'm a bad housekeeper because that would just mean the world's ending. I think that a lot of times I worry about unmanageable situations that's never going to happen. Like, no way my neighbors are going to say, oh, Amanda's house is a wreck. So why do I care?
Well, why are your neighbors in your house?
Well, they're letting the dogs out.
Oh, okay. What do you think might happen? I've seen your house. It is pristine.
I don't.
Like, you clearly don't have any recollection of what it's like to live with tornadoes. Like, to live with creatures that just are shedding Ritz cracker stuff. And like,
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I remember my floor would get sticky from Holden, like, near his little area. Holden is my son, who's not 14.
It was so ominous.
It would get, like, sticky near his, like...
Yeah.
Like, little, like...
They're just sticky creatures.
They're sticky.
They're always covered in crumbs. Their face always has, like, this ring of...
The ring.
Who knows what around it. Yeah.
You're, like, right in the middle of, like, stick zone.
Stick zone?
Like, everything's sticky.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, they really like sticks, which is also true.
Oh, like sticks.
At that age, they're like, sticks are great.
Like the band? I'm kidding.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. My kids they really go into 70s rock.
I like sticks. I don't care what anyone says. I do. I like them. I feel like they're kind of a joke, but they shouldn't be. And they're still touring, I thought.
Are they?
I thought so, yeah.
Okay. You do have a profound amount of expertise on
useless
bands that are no longer in the zeitgeist that are somehow all...
I want to see so many bands, but they don't come around here. It's really... Like, Fred Meyer Garden gets some good things, but they haven't released their schedule yet. We saw Tony Bennett there.
That does not elicit any reaction
well,
from me
weird
whatsoever. You know who I'm seeing that no one will recognize in May? A group called Belle and Sebastian that was a really...
Yes.
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't. You should, though, given your musical proclivities. They were a British folky band from, like, the early 2000s.
That sounds like me.
And they were very popular in the, like, indie indie nice. World around them. Nobody knows who they are.
They sound really good.
Elder millennials are the only people who they are.
I'm that millennial.
But they're going to be in Ann Arbor. So I'm going by myself.
I want to see Depeche.
Yeah.
But it's like the tickets are insanely expensive.
That doesn't surprise me.
And the closest Pulp is going to come to Chicago. And then Weezer and the Flaming Lips are going to come to...
Together?
Yes, they are going to be together. And it's, I think, Toronto. And then I'm not going. These are all concerts I'm not going to, guys.
That's not even close.
I know, but that was the closest they get.
Okay.
And then I want to see... Well, the Flaming Lips are going to be at that Monroe place.
Oh, yeah, 20 Monroe.
Yeah, I like the Flaming Lips a lot.
You can't even complain that they're far.
I know.
You wouldn't even have to stay overnight.
I don't want to stay. I'm so weird about concerts, but the thing is that I always regret it. My son loves Weezer.
So. Which is hilarious to me.
He loves Weezer. He loves the book Dune.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Star Wars. It's part of that culture that just kind of keeps getting passed down.
Yeah.
90s music, not so much, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know what? On those days when you are feeling like you just can't connect with your teenager and like you just like you feel like you just don't know him anymore, think about Weezer.
I saw Weezer in concert. And he's like, you saw Weezer in concert? Yeah, I did.
And that's the most impressed he ever gets.
I know, right?
That's almost the most like level of interest he can.
That's something with the Pixies. Yeah. And you want to talk about books?
Do we have to?
No.
Do you feel this profound need to change the subject to something else?
No.
Let's hold off on talking about books and talk about Kate.
Okay.
What's happening with Kate? I know that you know. I know that the royal family passes the inside scoop to you.
I know.
So what's happening with Kate? Kate Middleton we're talking about.
Yes, Kate Middleton. Or as I call her, the Duchess of... Let's just... Princess Kate. Okay.
You specifically call her the Duchess of
when
Wales?
When I call her on the phone, we're just going to call her Princess Catherine.
But you guys probably haven't talked in a while because she's been, been out of the limelight.
She's not the Duchess of Cambridge anymore. She's Princess Kate. Okay. Well, she's kind of like playing like hard to get with me. Not returning my phone calls.
Hard to get? Like what?
Like we used to talk all the time on the phone, you know?
Okay.
And then now she's just kind of responding, which is okay. She's busy with her three kids. But do I think she's missing or kidnapped or all these other things? No. She has the stomach issue. She has every advantage in the world when it comes to medical issues that the majority of the world doesn't. So if anyone's going to make it through there, what do the kids think of this? What do their schoolmates say?
Always baffled by what the experience might be for an actual small child, like being that. And so much more so now than it would have been even when Will and Harry were kids. Because, like, the internet is everywhere.
I would not want to be Princess Kate. It is just too much. The fact that their nanny has, like, anti-kidnapping training would just... And driving lessons to, like, able to escape would just, it's necessary, but send me into a tizzy that your kids are targets by kidnappers. Nobody's trying to kidnap my child.
That's good.
I know.
Yeah, something to be thankful for.
God, what?
Well, your kid's kind of annoying. I mean, that makes sense. Oh, okay. Okay. So it's okay for you to, it's okay for you to say it, but it's not okay for me to say
it. On here, that's so hot. I'm sorry. They'll play this at my funeral.
No, they won't. No one will remember this happened. But
no, but
I mean, I love my kids, but they're annoying sometimes.
I feel like Holden is a good kid, and I love him very much. He's the most important person.
Sorry, Ryan. You just got bummed.
Ryan would say that. Well, Ryan, what he did with...
You do not want to say anything negative about your son on the air, but your husband is another story.
Well, I made chicken in the crock pot, and he ordered Taco Bell instead. DoorDash Taco Bell. And then I had made...
That's not cool.
And then I had made, because it's half day today, I made Holden pasta. And he said to Holden, even though he made pasta, he's like, Holden, do you want some Taco Bell? So these chuckleheads ate had beautiful food that they didn't even eat it. It made me sad.
I have to reserve my opinions about the eating situation in your house. Because I have thoughts that I've shared, but
I know.
I try to support you.
In our house, we all share very different diets. And it can cause situations. I have a whole food, plant-based.
And it's fine. It's just you cook for them.
My diet is a lot. It's a lot for a person. It's just...
Oh, wow.
I mean, to me, it probably tastes good, but I don't know any better.
You don't know? Oh my gosh. You make it sound like you're living off pudding or something.
I haven't had a processed anything since January 3rd.
Well done, you.
No, so my taste buds have changed.
I desperately need to get back to that. On that note, we've talked about nothing in particular. Okay. This is nonsense. We'll let this nonsense lead into our guest this week, who I'm sure will be horrified to be connected with anything that we just talked about, who is very gracious to join us, not Amanda this time, to join me to talk about, you know, life growing up in this area and being representative of our constituents. His constituents, I suppose. I don't have any constituents. We just have our guest this week is Representative Pat Outman. Amanda Lee is the director of the Montcalm Area Reading Council, which has its office in our building, and she's also a friend of mine. So we've recorded together a couple times, and we just end up talking about really silly things. Every single time I do this with her, she'll have one thing at the end where she'll be like, oh, don't let anybody know I said that. I'm not going to sleep until you promise me that you take that out.
Good friend. I love it.
So yeah, let's go ahead and get going. I'm really happy that you were able to come in. I will say also, I will sneak this in because I can't imagine why you would know this yet. I actually set up a time to have a conversation with your dad also here in a couple of weeks. So
I actually did know that.
You did? Okay.
He mentioned that to me last night.
Okay.
I live next door to my parents. So I see my dad a fair bit. And yeah, so he mentioned that. He's excited. I don't know when exactly you guys have that planned.
Yep. It's like 2 or 3 weeks out. So that'll be fun.
Oh, terrific.
You should just get the whole family.
Why not? Might as well invite my wife to come in.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I love interviewing married couples. It's so much fun. Especially when I ask them the same question and see what, it's a little like the newlywed game.
Exactly.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't recognize your voice already, could you tell us who you are, where you are in an average day, and what you've got going on these days?
Sure. Well, I'm State Representative Pat Outman, and I represent the 91st District, which includes parts of three counties. The majority of it consists of Montcalm, but I also represent portions of Northern Ionia and Northern Kent County.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm a state representative, so I spend a lot of time in Lansing at our state capital. I spend a fair bit in district as well, meeting with folks, going to various organizational meetings, things like that. A little bit about me. My wife and I, we just welcomed our second baby into this world about 4 weeks ago. So busy with a newborn at home, and you know, it's exhausting, but we're really enjoying it.
Yeah, you are right in the thick of it right now.
Absolutely. And we have a toddler at home, too, so that just... Okay. Adds even more chaos.
My heart goes out to you. It really does. I've got two kids too, but mine are about 4 years apart. I could make my four-year-old understand at the time, like, you need to give me some space, kid. He was old enough to get it, but how old is your oldest?
So he's about a year and a half.
Okay.
He doesn't understand the concept of personal space yet. We're still working
out. Okay. Pretty mobile too, I would imagine.
Very mobile. Constantly chasing him down. Our whole house is a big hazard. We live in an old farmhouse, so there's that component as well.
I live in an older house, too. And actually, I'm getting ready to move here just across the street into
Congratulations.
Vision. Thank you. And I love old houses, but I've thought multiple times, when these people built these houses, did they understand that they were going to have children in them?
Yeah, I don't... You know, and I'm assuming they did because back then they had like 12 kids apiece.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, this house had zero storage. The layout is very questionable, and the electrical outlet is very fun. There's very few of those as well.
Oh, okay.
So we're doing the best we can, but it's certainly a challenge.
As far as I remember, you're still kind of, you're exhausted. You're still kind of just like getting into the groove of it, but they're still kind of sleeping at that point.
That's right. We're both absolutely exhausted. We walk around like zombies all the time, but it's consistent.
You look very bright and alert today. I will give you credit for that.
I appreciate that. Looks can be deceiving. I will say that. But yeah, I mean, sleeps and eats all the time. So it's very consistent.
Yeah.
You can schedule around it. The toddler is just a complete chaos.
They're
organized chaos. But
how does the toddler feel about... Are they both boys?
They're both boys. My son, Miles, it's been a little bit of an adjustment for him. I will say that I don't even think he acknowledged our baby for the first year or so.
Right, yeah.
He's warming up to him now. He'll give him a pat here and there and likes to steal his binky, of course. But I think we're making progress on that front.
Is your wife home with them?
She is. And she'll be on maternity leave for... at least another 6 weeks or so. And like I said before, we live right next door to my parents. And so,
Oh, that's nice.
That has been an absolute blessing. My mom is able to help out a lot as well. It's been nice.
Do they like being grandparents?
They love it. When you invite my dad on here, that might be all he will talk about. So you'll have to steer the conversation at some point, but they absolutely love it. My older sister has kids as well, but she lives out of state. So these are like the first.
Yeah, they're local.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
really
that's
enjoying
a good
that.
Feeling. Yeah.
And it's a blessing to us too.
Yeah. having a support system when their kids are that young, just it can, you can take it for granted. It makes all the difference.
Oh my gosh. Well, I tell people all the time, like, that is the only parenting hack that I found actually works, is just move next door to your parents.
Yeah. And hopefully they are still interested in being around children, and they're not just like, I did this already.
I'm exactly.
I'm assuming that you've obviously been in this area for at least most of your life, if not all. So what have been your favorite memories about growing up in this area?
Yeah, you're right. I've lived in this area my entire life. Even when I went off to college, I commuted back and forth. So I truly have lived in Montcalm County my entire life. Very happy childhood. Grew up with just tons of family around, aunts, mm-hmm. uncles, cousins, grandparents. I had a set of grandparents that lived just north of Lakeview and had a family farm there. So I spent a fair bit of time there. Just a really happy childhood and so many good memories, to be quite honest with. You know, things like riding bikes with my friends around. We rode our bikes just everywhere mm-hmm. growing up. Attending the annual 4-H fair in the summer mm-hmm. Brings back really fond memories as well. And really all the fairs and festivals around here as well. It seems like every small town has a parade and a festival and just very fond memories of going to those growing up as well. And then just, you know, playing sports and just hanging out with my friends. I just, you know, I look back at my childhood and just very fond memories all the way around.
I have the bias of having had this experience as well, but there's something to be said about sort of growing up in that small town experience to growing up in that semi-rural experience, getting to have fun in an outdoor capacity. I would imagine it's got to be a lot harder if you live someplace much more urban, that you get to send the kids outdoors. And...
Right. Yeah. And I live about 20 minutes north of here.
Okay.
So like the Six Lakes area. And for those that are not familiar, it's a small rural community in northern Montcalm County. That was just my life growing up, just out in the wide open country, just hanging out with my friends.
Is that the same area you grew up then?
It is.
Okay.
Yep. Still live on my family farm. Haven't made it too far in life.
Okay. So did you build on that, on their property then? Is that how you ended up living next door?
No, I actually live in the oldest house on that property.
Oh, right. Because you said it was an old house. Silly me. I've already forgotten.
Yes. Yeah. So this is like almost a centennial farm.
We've
occupied this space for nearly 100 years now.
Okay.
And so my parents actually are the ones that built.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So live right next door to them. Now, I got to ask you, are you from around this area?
Nobody ever asks me questions. And it takes me a little off guard. I am from Lowell originally.
Okay.
So that's where I grew up and, you know, went to school. My parents still live right on the border between the Lowell and Ada area. So we're just outside of Ada, which means, of course, their property value has just gone through the roof in the last.
I could imagine. So.
Yeah. I went to Central Michigan for my undergrad, and then I flitted off to Colorado for about a decade just to do something different because I went to graduate school out there. And I will say that I loved so many things about Colorado. There were lots of things to appreciate. And there is, interestingly enough, a decently large contingent of people from Michigan who do move out there and also who end up moving back. It's a funny thing, but there are lots of aspects of living that area that made me really appreciate here as well. There are things that coming back that I like, little things that you wouldn't necessarily think about, like those festivals that you mentioned. Like that's so many of the towns that have sprung up in that Denver corridor. They've been there for about 15 minutes. They just don't have any history. Like the entire town is built around Walmart.
Right.
Which is very convenient, but it definitely doesn't have that same sort of hominess.
Yeah, and I can totally see that, especially a place like Denver that just never stops growing.
Yes.
It's a shame to say I've never been to Colorado.
Well, you know what? I had not been west of the Mississippi until I moved out there, so no shame on you.
Okay. I still got time.
To change gears a little bit, obviously you've got a little bit of history in the family, but what inspired you to get into state legislature?
Oh, gosh. I mean, so many things, really. You know, obviously my dad was probably my biggest inspiration. Through his experience, I really did just fall in love with the legislature and just the ability to shape policy and to have the opportunity to represent the state with its 10 million residents. It was something that really called to me in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think I always had a calling to service. One of my biggest regrets in life was not serving our country in the military. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I feel like I've always had some sort of sense of calling to serve this country and nation in some capacity. And mm-hmm. so When the opportunity arose to run for this office, I jumped at it. I always knew I would run for office. I thought I would do it later in life, like my father. I thought maybe once I retired. Because in Michigan, we have such strict term limits. That's another aspect. It's really hard to pause your life for 6 years and run for public office. I just jumped at it, and I have no regrets. I love every minute of it. It's a really challenging time to be in politics and to serve the people, given the division in this country. But other than that, I mean, just no regrets. I absolutely love the job. I absolutely love representing the 91st District and all the people of Montcalm County. It's been a tremendous honor.
That's fantastic. I would imagine a fair amount of success definitely comes from being a good listener and being comfortable having conversations with people who might come at you feeling very strongly about something.
Oh, no question. I mean, one thing I've learned from this position, Steph, is people just want to be heard for the most part. I've had so many people call the office just fired right up and chewing my staff out. And then I get on the phone with them and just listen to them. Mm-hmm. By the end of it, we have a very cordial, you know, great conversation, mm-hmm. quite honest with you. So,
and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before we actually, you know, hit the ground with us. The way we experience so much of the world around us these days, it's all hitting us at once. Like with the internet, it's you know, everything is right in front of our faces and we're being inundated and overwhelmed. It's hard to process it and it doesn't feel natural. We are driven to engage with the people around us, to learn about our community directly from our community, from our neighbors, and it's stretching us in a way. And so having those conversations, I can imagine it makes a very meaningful difference for a lot of people.
I think it does. Yeah, I truly think that people, a lot of times, they just want to be heard. Whether you agree with them at the end of the day, you heard their concerns, you had a great conversation, you took the time to listen to them, and I think that goes a long way. And you're dead on about social media and, you know, Facebook in particular. It's really easy to silo yourself off with social media. You know, you don't have that direct connection with folks that you're speaking to like you do face to face. It's really easy to just hurl an insult out via the keyboard.
Right.
But you don't see how people react to it. So it's really easy to insult somebody that way. We're losing that direct connection with people.
Yeah. We don't have the context of a whole human being anymore when we think of people as sort of token issues that you're either for or against. You're on one side or the other, and there's so little middle ground. It's hard to see some of those things. There are so many factors that made you feel this in this moment about you as a person. And
Yeah, no question about it. I still think, though, that we, at the end of the day, we have way more in common than
I agree.
And I hope people can just sit back and remember that. I know it's hard to sometimes, but I really do believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Obviously, there are unique aspects of state government, but would you say that there's anything in particular that feels like state legislature was just a good place for you to dive in?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm one that just loves working on policy. And so from that perspective, this job is you know, a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. I love looking at a piece of legislation and scrutinizing it, trying to make it better, trying to make it palatable, something that, you know, will benefit my district and things like that. Mm-hmm. So there are so many unique aspects of state government. The state government is pretty much structured identically to our federal government.
Right.
In terms of the legislative branch, the executive branch, the judicial branch, we have a bicameral Congress, meaning we have a House and a Senate. So it really is structured, you know, identical, but there are some aspects that make it pretty unique. Mm-hmm. And one is just, and I think we talked about this earlier, but just the close proximity to constituents. You know, these really are my friends and neighbor that I'm representing down in Lansing. In state legislatures, they're a much smaller district. Mm-hmm. It just allows for more direct interaction with your constituents and your representatives that way.
Do you feel like your experience of it as a representative for a more rural district is different than, say, for, like, you know, Oakland County or the...
No question about it. That's where you see a lot of debate and whatnot in the state legislature. It's because we are representatives from all different parts of the state.
Right.
Different values, different perspectives, different demographics, things like that. So, you know, a lot of times I'll have a conversation with my colleagues that, you know, represent a urban area. And had to explain to them, this is why we don't like this legislation.
Right.
Just because it affects rural Michigan more in a different way than it does, you know, an urban setting like an Oakland County, like a Wayne County, like a city of Detroit, et cetera.
Right.
But that makes it fun, too. It truly is a melting pot, the legislature, of different people, different perspectives, things like that. So it, you know, it makes it challenging, but it also makes it really fun as well.
Imagine a unique challenge to bringing that rural perspective as well is the fact that simply by trying to apply resources to the largest number of people, I'm sure it's easy for a lot of focus to end up on those more urban areas. And there has to be a certain amount of advocacy just for, like, we may have fewer people in our constituency, but our voices still matter.
Yeah, no question. That's always a balancing act, and that's always a challenge. You know, the urban areas, they obviously have more population. And so you see a lot more resources go there and a lot of other things too. It can be frustrating at times, but that certainly is an accurate assumption, I would say.
I know that one thing that there's been so much conversation about how to improve the situation is specifically making internet access available to a broader range of people. And I think it's really easy to forget in 2024, how many families, how many homes don't even have access to that currently?
No question. I mean, really, COVID highlighted that for me.
Yeah.
When everybody suddenly had to work from home, kids are scrambling to learn from home. It's like, oh my gosh, broadband access, high-speed internet access, reliable internet access. It's not uniform across the board.
Right, absolutely.
And as a legislator, we've been trying to incentivize these telecommunications companies. Let's expand into these underserved areas. I know it's not economical for you. How can we make it economical? In this day and age, it's a lot better to have reliable.
It's essential. Yeah, it's become an essential service. And I know we see every day the cross-section of people who don't have access for whatever reason, either because they can't afford a device, they can't afford the service, whatever, or they just simply don't have access to it. So we see a lot of people who come to us because there's no way around it. They're applying for jobs. They're managing, you know, Social Security benefits. There's any number of things that they have to work with a doctor's office, and they have documents they have to send and whatnot. You can't avoid technology. It's not going away.
You can't. And I know it's a challenge for some of our older citizens. There's been so many times where they're struggling with a government department because of that learning curve in terms of technology. And,
right.
And we constantly have to walk them through the process and try to assist them in that regard. So it's a blessing and a curse all at once, I would say.
So when you're not immersed in this, what does your downtime look like? Like, what do you do for you?
Yeah, so I spend a lot of my downtime in the fall and winter when there's just not as much going on locally. A lot of my hobbies are revolve around the outdoors. I love hunting and fishing. I think every October and November, my wife wants to divorce me because every opportunity I get, I'm just out in the woods sitting in my tree stand.
What do they call them? The hunting widows or something?
Yeah, like that? And that's probably accurate. My wife could probably attest to that. I spend a lot of time reading as well. Actually, currently reading a really good fictional series right now. Hunting, reading. I have a lot of power sports, snowmobiles, ATVs, things like that. Really anything. I just kind of gravitate toward the outdoors.
Yeah, again, I mean, you've got all that beautiful space around you. And then, of course, in Michigan, you're never that far from a lake. So.
Oh, never. Yeah. I mean, this is really the perfect state for me. I mean, there's truly always something to do. So many great state parks and just so much access to the lakeshore. Mm-hmm. It's such a diverse and beautiful state. And I think that's why I could never leave it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, you get spoiled a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. What about you? What do you like to do in your
You keep off-time? Turning this on. I guess you don't normally get to do that.
If I try to ask a reporter a question back, they, you know, they don't
why
typically.
Why are you asking me?
Yeah, exactly. This is about you, Representative. Do you have any hobbies? I assume you read a lot.
I do, although not nearly as much as I used to, because, you know, there's just never enough time in the day. And
sure.
I've got two young kids, too. I crochet a lot. I really enjoy making things. I like to figure things out. Usually it's like at any given time, there's some new thing that I'm trying to figure out how to do. When the ISD was here a few weeks ago, they were talking about the Career Center and all of the different academic paths that the kids could go on to do these different trades or what have you. And while they were talking about it, I was thinking to myself, man, I want to do every single one of those. I want to learn diesel engines. I want to learn construction stuff. I want to learn the animal husbandry. I want to do all of it.
Oh, I know. I literally had to stop myself from signing up for random classes at the community college.
Right.
Just because there's so many cool things to do. And yeah, the Career Center, I participated in that as a student growing up.
Which path were you on?
So I did the automotive path.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And honestly, I did it just to get out of school for a few hours, but I ended up finding out I really enjoyed it. It was a ton of fun. I had some great instructors there. And so we were absolutely blessed to have a great career center around here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's nice and close by, too, which is great. When I was growing up in Lowell, we could take advantage of the Kent Career Technical
yes.
Center, but it was still a little bit of a trek. And I'm glad that it seems more kids are being encouraged to follow those paths. I am one of those weirdos that thinks that it's great to provide opportunities for people to go through college if that's what they want to do, if that's their path. But if there's a road that they can go down that takes them towards a particular trade or prepares them for the world in a different way, then we should honor that.
Oh, no question. Yeah, there's so many great opportunities within like the skilled trades or really any of that. And so, yeah, I mean, kids don't have to, you know, a four-year institution is not always for some students.
Yeah.
Especially with as big of an investment as it is nowadays, college that is. So, I mean, if you can, you know, get a leg up, go to a career center, learn a skill, and then progress in life that way, that's a great path.
Yeah, and those kids come out, in some cases, prepared to actually enter the workforce immediately. So.
Oh, yeah, most cases they do. These are such high-demand jobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're kind of facing a labor cliff in Michigan a little bit. You know, we have a population problem, and then we have an entire generation that's on the cusp of retiring. And
right.
So if we can build that pipeline, you know, the best we can, I think it'll benefit the state.
It would be good for us culturally to talk more about those paths with the same value as going to college. But we put a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
Socially, it's just a choice. We all have our path. Devaluing anything that is not specifically the four-year college is very misleading.
Yeah, it is. I think we've put too much emphasis on the college prep aspect of things in school. And it's great. And we shouldn't stop doing that, but we should also...
not only do that.
We should emphasize some of these other paths as well.
Yeah.
And keep people prepared for life beyond K-12.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great opportunities out there.
Yeah.
Aside from going to a four-year institution or a community college.
We talked about the young kids a little bit already. How much different does it feel like now having that extra loud voice in the house?
Well, it's certainly challenging. Like I said, we live in a very small house, so.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of my job.
Echoey, perhaps.
Yeah. A lot of my job consists of virtual meetings.
Oh, so okay.
Yep. I have to preface every meeting with, you know, I apologize, you're probably going to hear a screaming toddler at some point. It's certainly been challenging, but just rewarding it. And I told you I have a tremendous amount of help. Like I said, I live next door to my parents. It's been such a blessing to have them. Help out as much as they do, and so I can just send the kids over there for a quick bit if I need to. Two kids under two, it can be a champ.
Even just two kids in general, because you're no longer, what is it they say, you go man-to-man instead of zone coverage for the kids, yeah.
Right, well, actually opposite, the other way around, I think, at some point, I don't know, I'm not good at sports. There's a crack reference there somewhere, but get spread pretty thin.
Yes,
that's for
true.
Sure. And I feel bad. I have a job that requires me to be gone quite a bit. And so my poor wife, she's stuck at home with the kids a lot, but she managed it just fine.
There are some people who are just equipped for that. And I've had the privilege to work with a lot of those families because I was a youth librarian for years and years. The Storytime families were frequently the families that had one parent that spent a lot of time at home with the kids. And they're not always women, but primarily women. And they are just miracle workers. Like,
oh, they really are.
Yeah. I was never a stay-at-home parent, and I am in awe of what they do and how much energy goes into it. And you are on all the time.
Oh, no question about
it.
You have no choice. You have to be on all the time. I would pull my hair out, I think, if I was a stay-at-home.
Me too. I enjoy my job. The balance is definitely nice.
Sure. How old are your kids? I know you said earlier.
My youngest is 3 and my oldest is 7. He's
okay.
In first grade here at Baldwin Heights. He's a little more independent these days, but they're both very strong-willed. They both have some big personalities.
Oh, sure. Well, that's a great ages.
Yeah. When I first interviewed for this position, I was just finishing up maternity leave with my youngest. And we were still doing virtual interviews. So I was interviewing virtually in the only room I could find that you could hopefully not hear all the chaos in another part of the house. I remember them saying, like, it's a little dark where you're at. And I'm like, I had to improvise here.
Now, have you done the whole daycare route? Because I'm, like I mentioned, I'm mm-hmm. fortunate enough to have my mom. But I don't know how, as we keep adding, I don't know if we're going to be able to rely on her as much as we do. But I mean, it really does seem like we're in a childcare desert around here. We've called
yes.
around, and even the places that that are open to taking kids. It might be a year-long waiting list.
Especially when they're really little, yeah. It's finding spots for infants is very tough.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We made it work. We were able to wait a little bit of time for both kids to put them in daycare, but they were both in it under one. We moved my oldest into a preschool program at Faith Community Christian here, just outside of Belding. Mm-hmm. They had nice little classroom cohort, so they were mostly just, there were five other kids that they were with, and that was perfect.
Sure.
We've been lucky, but I feel like there is an advantage, especially once they get maybe two-ish or older, to have them have that opportunity to be around other children regularly, because it prepares them a lot more for when they're older. Kids that come to kindergarten on the first day that have spent most of their time at home, it's a big transition.
Oh, no question. Yeah, and that's something we got to work on with my son, because like I said, we live next door to my parents, and so he's either at our house or my parents' house. He really doesn't have a ton of interaction with other kids, and so
right.
We've been slowly trying to introduce him to various things. We started this like toddler time thing up in Grand Rapids just to get him some of that social interaction, but I think that is important.
It is, yeah. I'm not an early childhood expert, but I think it actually does something significant to how their brain develops, too.
I can imagine.
As they transition from this concept of, like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically when they're not playing with the other children yet, but they're kind of playing right next to them,
mm-hmm.
so they're comfortable with them in their space, and then moving from that to actually engaging, and that having that that connection made in their brain. Hopefully you're more comfortable with people the older you get. Obviously, you talked a little bit about how even just being part of the legislature has changed since when your dad would have started. How do you think what's sort of important for your community and for your constituents? How do you think that's changed since 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, you know, it's certainly more divided now than mm-hmm. than when my dad first started getting involved, especially around here. I mean, whether you're pro wind turbine or anti wind turbine, or you're a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter, they're just, you know, no shortage of things to divide us nowadays. And I feel like, and we talked about this earlier, social media really amplifies that division in
right.
a lot of ways. That wasn't as prevalent when my dad first got into politics, but now it's pretty much unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. It's harder to be in the middle now, definitely.
Yeah, certainly. I am of one specific party, but mm-hmm. I have to represent everybody the best I can.
Right.
So it's maybe I don't represent you well on this issue, but I hope I represent you well on this other issue
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. But yeah, just the division has changed a lot, made it more challenging to serve, but you know, really the needs of the communities, those are still the same, it seems like, from
okay.
when my dad first got. Whether, you know, we have a housing shortage, you know, our communities still aren't getting the share of state resources as other parts of the state. While it's changed quite a bit, at the same time, the issues have kind of stayed the same. Michigan's kind of unique in a sense that we don't really have a diversified economy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is just so tied to the auto industry.
Right.
Even a lot of the local manufacturing around here, so something happens in that sector of the economy, you know, we're kind of held hostage in a lot of respects.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so trying to diversify our economy the best we can, although it's kind of a challenge up in rural Michigan, just given the mm-hmm. given the resources and other challenges that we have. But you know, housing is one that's been just a prevalent one throughout the last number of years, because you want your kids to stay close. You want to have that relationship. And if there's not housing available, they're going to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing that, you know, take place. A lot of younger people are getting out of Dodge. And so,
mm-hmm. and then on the flip side, a lot of, you know, older people are staying in their homes for much longer too. So
yeah.
So there's not as much coming on the market because, you know, people are shifting their living situation.
Oh, no question. And this is a real estate market. It's a kind of a supply and demand issue here, but
yeah.
Try buying a house right now.
I just did. It wasn't fun.
No, it's fun. It's not, or building one for that matter.
Buying a second house, it's a very different situation than trying to get into it for the first time.
Yeah, no question about it. And we just bought our first house a couple of years ago. And
okay.
Prior to that, I rented a place. And, you know, that worked well for a time. But at some point, you want to own the house.
Yeah, you want to have some outdoor space.
Yeah.
Some walls that you're not sharing with people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you were a kid, were you a school person or a non-school person?
Yeah.
Like, did you like going to school?
It's funny because I'm one that looks on my school years as really fond memories.
Wow.
I absolutely love the school I went to. I went to Lakeview. It's just a small school in northern Montcalm County. But
that's where my dad went.
Oh, is that really?
Yep.
Okay. My parents as well. basically my whole family for the most part went to Lake. And so we are Wildcats through and through. It's funny. I wasn't necessarily a school person per se. Academically speaking, I didn't take it very seriously. I didn't get serious about it until my higher education career when I started paying for my own college. And then I took it very
I'm sure that helps.
Yeah. I took it very seriously after that. I hate to even admit this, but I was a very naughty kid growing up, constantly getting into trouble, hard time staying in my seat, all harmless fun. I just like to mess around with my friends and not take anything too seriously. But I certainly enjoyed school. It's fun running into my former teachers.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like, really? I'm surprised this is the career path you chose.
Okay. So that was another question I asked. Was there a time that you had something else that you wanted to do when you were growing up?
There was. So I spent most of my younger years, planning to take over my family's excavating business.
Okay.
So excavating, home construction. I wanted to be a farmer on the side as well. So most of my life, that was my plan. But, God always has a different plan for you. And so when this opportunity presented itself, I jumped at it, but it was not my plan. And if I did run for office, it was going to be, later on in my, maybe my retirement.
I mean, that still sounds like it was a very sensible goal to get into. Like, it's not as though you were secretly wanting to be like an astronaut rock star or something.
It's funny. I never had big aspirations like that for whatever reason. I always just wanted to do what my dad did. And so if he was going to be, a postmaster, I probably would have been a postmaster.
Oh, okay.
I was kind of one of those kids, to be quite honest with you. While other kids were, begging to hang out with their friends, I was begging my dad to take me to work with. I just wanted to be an excavator and a farmer, and obviously I took a different route.
That's one of the aspects of state legislature, too, is that it doesn't become your whole life either, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I serve with people from all walks of life. I mean, they could be a dietitian, they could be a home builder, they could be a farmer, they could be a doctor, a lawyer, a lot of lawyers. So you just never know. That is kind of one of the unique perspectives of state legislature. Uh-huh. These are citizen legislators for the most part.
Right. Part-time, so to speak. Not exactly part-time, but yes.
Exactly.
It's not your whole life.
Right, yet. Right.
Yeah. Which I think there's definitely some value to that, because anything like this that you spend your whole career doing something specific, even with the best intentions, I feel like it would still be easy to sort of lose track of what life looks like from the outside.
Oh, no question about it. And I don't want to knock career politicians, but there is a benefit to bringing a different perspective to the legislative branch of government. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
So the core concept behind the podcast, of course, was this idea of like how comforting it is to just sort of lounge on the front porch and engage with the people in your family and the people who live around
you.
Yeah,
I love that.
So thank you. I have to ask, does your family have a front porch?
They do, and they did. Yeah, we had a nice covered front porch.
Okay.
It kind of overlooked one of our hay fields.
Ooh, okay.
It faced the east, so it was really ideal for sunrises. Yeah, we loved the front porch. Had a nice swing on it as well. I spent a lot of time out there reading and, family birthdays, things like that. It was well utilized.
Yeah, yeah. If you can actually get the get-togethers to work around that, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and now that we've all moved out of the house, sadly, now there's just a herd of cats out there on the front porch, it seems like.
What constitutes a herd? How many were you talking about?
Gosh, there could be half a dozen, there could be a dozen.
Oh, okay.
There could be 20. I don't really know.
Okay. Do they change in number? Like, why is it? Are they barking?
They are essentially barn cats, and they multiply like crazy. My parents just constantly are going to the elevator buying these big bags of cat food to feed these critters. But, it's sadly our front porch has been reduced to that.
Well, I suppose it's better than your whole house.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, very much so. We don't want to have feral cats running around.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But I bet they keep the mice away, though.
They do.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's one of those advantages.
It's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you were reading something, like there was a series you were reading right now. What is it that you're working through?
So it's the Last Kingdom series. It actually turned into a television show.
Okay.
But I've been reading this author, a guy named Bernard Cornwell, for
a
long
okay.
time. So this is about the formation of modern day England, essentially. It takes place in the 11th century. This is when you had England, but it had a bunch of different kingdoms. Uh-huh. You know, there wasn't a central kingdom there, and they were fighting the Danes all the time. Uh-huh. So this is the formation of modern-day England.
Okay.
And a guy named Alfred the Great, the only king that they called a great in England, pretty much assembled all the kingdoms and started pushing off the Danes. And that's what this story is about. I've been reading it for about a year now. There's like 13 books within this series.
Okay. Is it historical fiction or fantasy?
It's
somewhere in the middle?
I would categorize it as historical fiction. It is fiction, but it's based on a lot of real events.
Okay. Okay.
You know, some of the characters are real, some of them are made up.
Right. Okay.
Kind of a hybrid in between those two.
But it's realistic. Like, there are no fantastical elements to it.
There is a little bit. There is a little bit of magic within it as well, but it's like shamanistic kind of stuff.
Okay.
So there's just a touch of that.
Yeah, it's very low key.
Very low key. Okay. Yeah.
That is the fantasy that I can deal with too. Anything that is, the name that comes to mind if you ever read them when you were younger is there's a series by a woman named Anne McCaffrey who does the Planet Full of Dragons, Pern. Like she had a whole series about all these dragons.
No, I'm actually not familiar.
But
with this.
Anything that you have to learn the entire world. Again, respect for people who can immerse themselves.
Sure.
In that. Something that has historical basis like that, I'm much more comfortable with that too. Definitely.
Yeah, and you know, I gravitate more towards nonfiction historical books. I read a ton of those. I love biographies and things like that.
Okay.
But you know, I'm all over the place. I mean, I grew up reading Harry Potter. Those are absolutely some of my favorite books still to this day.
It's funny you mention that because the one conversation I've had thus far with your dad was for the Advocacy Day last year. And, you know, of course, we were talking about libraries. I remember him bringing up Harry Potter. Yes. And reading it with y'all when you were young.
Yeah, actually, funny story about that. So my dad and I read that series at the exact same time.
Uh-huh.
We would buy, you know, typically one copy of the book as they came out. And it was always a competition who could read. And so I'm rushing home from school, reading as much as I can. My dad's staying up way past his bedtime, reading as much as I can. I would get so mad if he get too far ahead of me in the story.
Okay.
But yeah, really fond memories of reading that series together. Absolutely.
Right, and if you've got the same copy, I'm imagining there were some dueling bookmarks in there a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was sort of a competition we had, but you know, just a great series to be quite honest with you. I still you know look back as those are some of my favorite books growing up for sure.
Yeah, there aren't a whole lot of series that you can easily read with a parent and sort of both enjoy it a lot. But that was definitely a good one like that.
Yeah, no question about it. Do you have any favorite books by chance?
You're doing it again.
Yeah,
I will read a cross section of fantasy. I've read way too much historical nonfiction as well. I have like 80 favorite books. That's my problem at this point.
Yeah, and that's my problem as well. There are so many that stand out though.
Yeah.
You know, like I look at books like The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. That one really, I remember having a really profound feeling after reading that book. Just a great American literature classic. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, trying times in America, Depression era,
right.
California, you know, migrant workers and things like that. There's just so many great books that stand out. I don't think I could come up with a favorite.
It's hard to, I mean, you enjoy a book for, one of my favorites is, I think it won the Pulitzer in like 2003-ish or something like that. It's by Michael Chabon and it's called The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And it's about two comic book writers, like writers and artists, right during the late 30s, early 40s, right when the big, all the Superman and Batman and all those comics like took off. One of the two main characters, he snuck out of, was it Ukraine? One of the European countries because, you know, his family was Jewish and they were trying to get him out before things got too difficult for him to escape. So, you know, there are things happening with his family in Europe while he's in the United States. And like, he's constantly feeling guilty about the fact that he's living this, you know, great comic artist life while his family is stuck behind you know, everything that's going on during that period in Germany. So it has that beautiful context of that era. And it's like writing something about the Titanic. It's this very universal tragedy that everybody's familiar with. And you, to a certain extent, you know that where things go for his family, it's not going to be happy and it's going to be rough. But it's such a beautiful encapsulation of that period in the United States, too. And like, that's why I keep going back to it, is it's so evocative.
Oh, this is one you've read more than once.
Oh, yeah. my favorites, I always end up reading again and again. It's like taking the same vacation over and over again.
You know, I'm sad to say, I don't know if I've ever read the same book more than once.
Well, good for you. I mean, that means you're diving into new stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem. I find so many good books that I want to read that I never circle back to some of the great ones that I've read. Someday I will. I got a mental list of books I want to go back and reread, certain. But who did you say was the author of that book?
Michael Chabon. He's a really excellent writer, but it was just one of those things where, like, it was such a beautiful confluence of different things that I've enjoyed his other stuff, but it's never been exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a specific area of historical nonfiction that you know, like, a lot about, that if somebody put you on the spot, you'd probably be able to give an answer on?
You know, World War II era, stuff like that.
I had a sneaking suspicion.
Yeah, but I'm delving into, you know, branching out to history outside of the United States.
Okay.
Branching into history of England and France and some of those areas as well. I would say I know enough to be dangerous on a lot of different areas. I don't know if I would nail down expert status in any of those.
Right.
There's some areas I would feel certainly more comfortable than others.
Right. If it came up as a category in pub trivia, you'd be able to hold your own.
Yeah. You know, I surprise myself on things like Jeopardy every once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
There'll be a certain category. It's like, that was made for me. I just nailed it.
Yeah. European history is definitely fun.
Fascinating.
They were all just always just sniping at each other. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's crazy to look back and, you know, even in those times, like a lot of things are very reminiscent of today, and, you know, just in tribalism, just random things like that. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't tell you in advance I was going to do this, but it's more fun if I sneak it on.
Okay.
Once I had scheduled both you and your dad coming on, I realized that it might be fun to do sort of a father-son version of the newlywed game and ask you each questions about the other person and see if you match up answers.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. All right. So I have a handful of questions and I'll have you answer for you, and then I'll have you answer for your dad.
Okay.
Easy questions, I promise. Favorite food?
Oh, gosh. And we're speaking in...
So first you, and then do what you think your dad will say.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. My favorite food is probably ribs. There's something about it. I absolutely love ribs. Pizza's up there too, but I'm just a big fan of baby back ribs for reason.
I get it. How about your dad?
My dad is probably a steak of some sort.
Okay. All right. It doesn't surprise me that your answers are both going to be meat.
Yeah, there is no surprise there.
When you're a farmer, I feel like that kind of, like, when you have that background, like, you have an appreciation for
it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Favorite vacation spot?
Ooh, I would say the Upper Peninsula.
Okay. Winter or summer?
Winter. Okay. I would say that for both my dad and I.
Oh, okay. You think that he would say Upper Peninsula too?
I think so. Very fond memories of our snowmobile trips up there. I think he's going to say winter.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely special things that you can do when the weather is snowier.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it also takes a very special kind of tourist in order to appreciate that. Oh, yeah.
No question about it. It's not for everybody, but but it's for us. That's for sure.
All right. Favorite movie?
This is a very tough one. Very tough. A lot of movies come to mind.
If you want to cheat and do, say, something like either from when you were younger or in the last few years, you can pick one of those just to make it, to narrow it down.
Let's do one from the last few years. I would say, and I haven't seen Dune 2 yet, and I'm really looking forward to that one.
Have you read I'm going off topic. Have you read the book?
No, it makes me want to be honest with you. But I absolutely love the first one. My staff tells me the second one is even better. I think I'll be making a trip this weekend to go see it. But probably for the last couple of years, my favorite movie would be Oppenheimer. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen it yet.
Phenomenal movie. Very long.
Yeah. It's a commitment, definitely.
It is a commitment.
Okay. And I imagine there's some of that historical element to it that, like, you like your history stuff.
I do. Yeah.
How about your dad?
I'm going to say Star Wars or Rocky.
Okay. All right. We're going old school on this one. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you watch a lot of those series when you were growing up?
Yeah, okay. I still do, as a matter of fact. I still watch both of them quite often.
Okay. Star Wars series, do you have a favorite, like, movie or period?
Yeah, and I'm kind of old school in that regard as well. I I'm a big fan of The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
I think that's just a phenomenal movie in the series. But also, even one of the new ones, Rogue One, is just a fantastic one. A little darker aspect to it than the other ones. But those are kind of the two that I gravitate towards, typically.
Favorite sport?
We're both going to say wrestling. Hands
down. Oh, okay. That is not what I would have expected.
Yeah. What did you expect?
I don't know. I didn't. It's not. I will say it's not your typical answer for a favorite sport.
Yeah.
Yes, but not necessarily favorite.
Yeah. We are weirdos in that regard. We the sport of wrestling. And that's like really the only sport that we even watch for the most part. I take that back. I love watching the Lions, but I'm not.
Oh, okay.
You know, aside from that, I'm really not a huge football.
Okay.
I do love the Detroit Lions, but we both watch wrestling. High school wrestling, college wrestling.
Oh, okay.
International Olympic wrestling.
Okay. So, okay.
I'm very confident he's going to say wrestling.
So less on the pro wrestling side as opposed to because that's a different beast, definitely.
Yeah, very much so. I never got into the WWE professional.
Yeah, yeah. That's very, it's much more performative, definitely.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I fit that target audience.
Yeah, but that's kind of a fun thing that you have together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever wrestle in school?
I did.
Okay.
I think my dad would disown me if I didn't wrestle. I did. I gave it my best. I wasn't nearly as accomplished as my dad, but I did wrestle pretty much my entire life.
I feel like in addition to football, that is one of the most physically taxing sports that kids that age can participate in.
Yeah, you know, I might be biased here, but I think it is the toughest sport. And
yeah.
I've had a number of friends that have kind of crossed over from different different sports, and they kind of agree. I mean, it's different in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
You are putting your body through things that nobody should put their bodies through. Cutting weight all the time.
Yeah,
it's just a whole different beast.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
One more. If you won $100 million, what would be the first thing you would do?
$100 million.
I picked a higher number because a million is like, oh yeah, well I'll buy a nice vacation home or something like that. It's not quite as huge a number these days.
Yeah, no question. By the time you get done with taxes too, it
whittles
it down there. But I don't know, to be quite honest with you. I'm not one that's ever like played the lottery or anything like that.
Let's pretend you just found it in the field one day or something.
Yeah. Found it in the field. First thing I would do is really fix up my farm and do something really, really spectacular with it. And then I would probably buy a bunch of hunting property in some other state, to be quite honest.
Okay. Any particular area that you would think of?
Yeah. Montana.
Yeah, I was going to say the Pacific Northwest.
Wyoming. You know, those come to mind right off the top of my head. Honestly, that's a very tough question. Make a bunch of sound investments, hopefully. Nothing fun. I wouldn't go out and buy a yacht or like a Lamborghini or anything like that.
Fun is different to everybody.
Yeah, it really is, to be honest with you. Probably buy an airplane, though. That would be kind of...
Okay. We're escalating a little here the more you think about it.
Yeah. So many ways you can go with that.
Right. What do you think your dad would do?
No idea, to be honest with you. My dad's even more boring than I am. I think he would
maybe he would totally go the other direction if he suddenly had a bunch of money in his lap.
Yeah, he might. He might totally change. Money might change my dad.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm sure it would change most people. Yeah.
I could see my dad buying some extravagant property, some luxurious cabin, being Colorado.
Okay.
Maybe just buy a bunch of property.
Something outdoorsy is what it sounds like.
Probably for the most part.
Those at least sound like fairly grown up choices.
If you gave me enough time, I would probably come up with some different answers.
Yeah.
That's one I've never really thought of what I would do if I had a bunch of money.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Have you thought about that before?
I feel like everybody just ruminates on it a little bit. Just like what it would be like to suddenly have. I've thought a little bit more about like what it, the smaller ones. Like what if somebody just gave me $100,000? I'd pay off all my student loans.
Oh, yeah. No question. I would do something very practical.
But with a bigger amount, I would immediately pass it on to somebody else who's more responsible than me to keep track of.
That's a great
answer. Definitely travel some. Just, you know, have the freedom to just...
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. Can I add travel as well?
Yes, yes. The
revise mine.
The time frame is still open. We're good. And then I've also thought about the fact that I would really, I think I would probably buy a little bit of property too, but specifically to set up an animal shelter. Ooh. Like I would love to be able to put some funding into rescuing animals that, you know, that for whatever reason just have not had a good run in life. There are so many animals out there that they have health issues or whatever that they're hard to get adopted out. And mm-hmm. giving them a nice home sounds nice.
Absolutely. I love that. So you mentioned traveling. Have you ever traveled internationally?
I have. I spent a while goofing around in my early 20s, which is really the time in your life to goof around if you're
Absolutely.
Going to.
Yes.
I walked away from school for a little bit, and I spent some time living on next to nothing in Western Europe for a little bit, and then came back because I didn't have any money left. I feel like if you have the opportunity to do that sort of thing when you're at a point in your life where you have no obligations yet, you're not tied down to a whole lot, and you don't mind living next to nothing because you get older and you're like, okay, well, I want to sleep in a room that doesn't have 17 strangers in it, because a lot of the hostels in there, you're sleeping around a bunch of people you don't know. And being comfortable with the idea of having everything that you have with you day to day in one backpack, that having that freedom is
that's awesome. I think that's one of my biggest regrets too. I mentioned the military aspect of things, but like doing something spontaneous, like backpacking through Europe in your right. early 20s, I feel like I have a little bit of regret of not doing something like that. That would have been really cool. Kind of like you said, experiencing all of that and kind of frequenting the hostiles and something like cool and edgy about that.
I will also acknowledge that it's definitely a privilege to be able to have done that too. I was lucky enough that my family could get me over there. It's definitely harder to do when you know that there's more at stake financially. My passport has unfortunately been expired for a while, and I haven't had good reason to renew it.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to get a passport at some point in time. My wife and I are planning a big trip to Italy and venture over to Greece too.
Okay.
I've never been international before.
Oh,
so
yeah. Okay.
This will be a entirely new experience. Yeah, I would love to do a little bit of traveling. Absolutely.
I can recommend Germany for food, too.
Yeah, Germany's on my list, big time. I mean, yeah. A lot of Europe is. I would love to experience Germany.
Germany and Italy. If you were a food person, those are the places I would recommend.
My wife is a food.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely. Like some wine, too. That's why I think she's really going to enjoy Italy.
And I mean, France is okay. Like,
yeah, I've heard mixed reviews about France, to be quite honest with you.
There's certainly aspects of And it's a big country. That romance for like Paris and whatnot, it passed me by.
Yeah. So, and I've heard similar sentiments to that. I thought I would love Paris. I thought there, you know, that would be a city that I would really gravitate towards. But getting a lot of bad reviews on Paris.
It's kind of gross.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. It's not the 1800s. It's very metropolitan. It's very dirty in a lot of areas.
That's what I've heard. I also heard that the people are a little bit rude there. They don't care for Americans as much. I don't know. Did you have that experience or not so much?
Occasionally, many of them, they learn English as part of their academic career. So by the time they're adults, they are fairly fluent in it. And there is a little bit of derision for people whose French is not up to their... There's a little like, please don't speak my language. I
don't even attempt. Well, that would be nice for me. Yeah, I mean, just the fact that they could speak English to me, that would be very helpful.
Yes. But in Europe, most of the cities, it's fairly easy to find people who speak English.
Sure.
Or to learn just enough of the language to be able to order the food you want. And
yep.
That's enough.
Yep.
I would recommend London over Paris, personally.
Okay. Noted.
Especially if you're...
That's on the list as well.
English history is your... Because, I mean, there are areas of London that are still... not only original to when the city was first formed as a city, but pre-original. Like there's Roman ruins still and stuff there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're a history nerd, it's a good place to go.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Lundeen. That's how it's said in the book I'm reading right now. It's,
oh, okay.
So
yeah.
Kind of pre-London. But yeah, there is that aspect of, there's like two towns. There's like the old Roman part of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the people in London think it's all haunted. So they stay over on the new side of London. So. It's pretty interesting.
There's always been a little kid part of me with anything European, thinking that it must have felt so different than growing up in the United States, because you're surrounded by things that have been there for thousands of years.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And you just take them for granted.
Right. Well, it's really remarkable to look back at how young our country is.
Yeah.
It's not that old.
Right. I feel like there's value in the fact that's our experience. We got to form a little bit later. We got to be a little more purposeful.
Oh, absolutely. We paved the way for a lot of countries. terms of forming a representative democracy and establishing a constitution, things like that. We were able to see all their mistakes and learn from them.
Yes.
And there's some great aspects of that as well.
Yeah, it's a good place to be.
Yeah, no question.
Okay, on that patriotic note, I really liked having the chance to chat with you. It's been fun. And I'm really curious to see what your dad says and if you guys match up on stuff.
Me too. I'm going to be very disappointed if I'm dead wrong on some of those answers. I thought I know my dad pretty well, but we'll see.
Maybe it'll be a learning experience. Maybe it'll give you a chance to get to know each other better.
Yeah, it will be. But this has been an absolute privilege. Thank you so much for having me on my first podcast. I love this library. It's a people place. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Did you send me something?
I might have. It was a mistake.
You sent me thumbs up. You're like, yes, I'm in favor of continuing this conversation. That's the level of what this has become. We're also Facebook messaging each other simultaneously while doing this. It's like next level friendship right here. So I figured since the first part of us talking was just complete nonsense from beginning to end, and my apologies again for that to anyone who trudged through it. Thank you for staying with us and for listening to Pat, who I'm sure was much more logical and concise. To change it up here, what we're going to do is, for those of you who are not aware, in our catalog, our library catalog on BiblioCommons, there's an option to take a look at everything that has recently been released and has come to our shelves. So if you're interested in finding this, if you go to our main page, there's an option at the top that says Explore. And then when you go to that dropdown, it says New Titles. And then you can use the dropdowns from there to specifically look for adult titles or kids titles. If you want to look for books, ebooks, audiobooks, you know, whatever, you can narrow it down. But for right now, Amanda and I are looking at our list of the most recently sent to the shelves or recently ordered adult book titles. So we're going to sort of flip through a little bit and see what strikes our fancy. So what are you seeing? You've got that look on your face.
I know,
like you've
I found
seen
a good
something.
One. It's called The Divorcees by Rowan Beard, I believe.
Okay. And this sounds like fiction.
This is fiction. And I don't like fiction. Okay.
So you're being disingenuous right from the start because you don't read fiction.
If you know me, you know, a novel set at 1950s Reno Divorce Ranch explores a complex friendship between two women who dare to imagine a different future. What drew me into that was 1950s Reno and Divorce Ranch.
Okay. What is Divorce Ranch?
And Divorce Ranch is in quotes.
What does that mean?
I don't know. See, now you're into it.
You're going to have to read the book to find out what a divorce ranch is. It sounds like something that would be on a show that you would watch.
It does.
So in summation, if they turn this into a miniseries, then you would be all over it.
I would be all over it. I see. Yeah, there's a lot of good things on here. I only can read so much, though.
I mean, that's literally true of all human beings.
I'm already knee-deep in like 9 books right now.
This is cheating because I'm not looking at it from the actual list, but the one that I'm reading right now that also just came out is from an author named Philip B. Williams. It's called, Hours. There we go. That's the name of it. It is a really fascinating magical realism story set in the 1840s that focuses around a woman who is a conjurer and who frees a number of slaves through magical means and then forms this community out in the middle of Missouri and the interesting sort of folktale things that happen in that community. Oh, it's so good. It's the first novel I've picked up in a while, and it was largely because the name of the author reminded me of somebody that I knew, and then I opened the book and realized that it was somebody I knew, that it was one of my friends from my MFA program. So I was really excited about that, which, you know, good for him because he's a poet and he's writing big, beautiful novels now. So check it out. It's really good.
I will.
But you'll have to wait until I'm done with
it. Oh, brother. I'm trying to, I've read books from the library, the new section, recently.
The new section is just so, it just makes things so much easier because there's fewer to look at and it gives your brain something to center on.
I'm trying to look at my reading challenge on Goodreads.
Oh, I don't even do that anymore.
Am I only talking about new books?
It's up to you. I'm trying to direct people to this, but I already cheated. So I think you're
okay.
Good.
So I read this book last week, and Sally Field in Pieces.
Okay.
It is so good.
I mean, that one's not that old, is it?
I think 2017.
Oh, okay.
But it's so good.
Her memoir.
I really recommend it. And then a new book, The House of Hidden Meanings by RuPaul. That was very good.
Okay. And somebody really likes celebrity memoirs.
Somebody really does. This is an older book, but I really think people should read it. It was In Order to Live, A North Korean Girl's Journey to Freedom. It's about it was so good. That is like a life changer for me.
Oh, wow.
It's
okay.
Really, really good. And then, I mean, there's so many on here I've read that are just...
Stop ridiculous. Using your Goodreads. You're totally... Go back to where we were. We're all good. We're all on the same page here.
Okay, on the page. No, but I...
I want to know, personally, what the secrets of the octopus are.
I know,
like,
right?
What are those octopus secrets? That's a new book by Cy Montgomery. That's a nonfiction book. What secrets? I didn't know that there were any secrets. And
aren't
now
they,
I'm...
like, really smart?
Are they?
I heard they were smart.
I have this image of them being kind of, like... grumpy.
Can't they escape from things as well?
Probably.
I remember someone escaping. I'm trying to look at other good books.
You can always tell that it's my fault if you see a new nonfiction book about the Tudors too. And we have another one. We have one about Elizabeth I that just hit the shelves called Young Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. I'm only finding nonfiction books. So I guess I hope you are interested in nonfiction.
That's my favorite, as you know. That's my favorite.
Yes, specifically. Celebrity memoirs.
Yes, I feel like it's really my thing. No, there are like a lot of good books I wanted. That's the problem. Okay, I feel like
it's too much
between TV and then books. It's like always like a competition because I have to keep up with my TV, but I also have to do this, and I also have to.
Who is making you do this? Like, who is? Who are you, like,
Kate Middleton, of course. Just kidding.
You don't talk about anything in her personal life,
okay.
But she keeps you on task
yes.
with your reality
yeah,
TV.
No.
Good on her.
I know. I just feel like it's just to keep up with stuff.
That's fair.
I'm trying to, like, you, but I like
gotta
this.
Be in the zeitgeist.
Also, just, like, going to the shelves and picking things, like,
yeah.
That's always fun, too.
I appreciate about this the fact that you can actually see the book covers, because that is the one downside to just perusing the shelves. I feel like I'm, like... a little bit spoiled at this point. So when I walk over to those shelves, I'm like, all I see is book spines. Like, this isn't enough for me. I need a cover.
Oh, right now I'm reading from the new section here, Slow Noodles. It's about...
That sounds familiar.
It's about this girl from Cambodia who was there during the Cultural Revolution, like the extermination of the people who were considered, you know, educated. And it's about her life through kind of recipes.
Oh, interesting.
It's really
okay.
Good. Hate to even say what it's about. I'm only like maybe like 45 pages in, but
right.
It's very good.
Okay. So those 45 pages have been compelling.
Yeah, they have been.
Can you eat anything that has been discussed in it?
Yeah, like the sweet and sour mango thing sounded good.
Okay. Yeah. Mango is it makes everything
mango's
better.
Really good. So I guess you'd say I also like things about Asian Americans too, like that one about North Korea and that like that kind of stuff too.
Those two books do point in that direction, certainly.
I always do read that.
Yeah, you like things about people.
Yeah, I do like things about people. And usually females, too, when you think about it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes you feel a part of that experience, perhaps.
I don't want to be part of some experiences, though.
Or maybe makes you more grateful for your own experience?
And that is horrible to say, because I feel like that makes me kind of a bad person.
Why?
I don't know, like, I'm so grateful I'm not them, but...
Oh.
I think it makes me appreciate my life more.
Right. But I think I would take the positive end
of
that.
Like, when I, like... I'm like, these people are grateful for like half a bowl of rice. I should get my stuff in gear and be a little more grateful for what I have.
It provides you context, perspective.
Yeah, it is context. But no, there's a lot of good books out there. People need to go to the library.
Why are you listening to this right now and not currently at the library? I'm just joking.
I was like, me
this
personally.
Counts. This counts. No, I don't. I mean, you're literally 3 feet away from me. Yeah. I know where you are. I'm talking about the people we're talking to. Can we talk about books more, though?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the new novels that we have that just came out this month is called Can't We Be Friends? And it's a novel about Ella Fitzgerald and Marilyn Monroe.
Really?
Yes. So it is historical fiction, but it contains the stories of both of those women. So.
Oh, okay. See, I get nervous with historical fiction.
As do I.
So good. I'm glad you get nervous, too, because I get...
Or I get irritable. I think that's a better way to phrase it. Because I expect a certain amount of... authenticity that is just not possible.
It makes me nervous that I'll think that story really happened and if it didn't really happen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like it's kind of like someone writing a fake biography.
Kind of.
And it makes me really nervous.
Yeah, it's easy to integrate it into what you know actually know about the person.
Yeah.
A lot of people have probably heard of this, but there was the really long novel that Joyce Carol Oates wrote about Marilyn Monroe, Blonde, which I read probably half of because it was like 1,200 pages.
It was
really
very
long. But, I mean, that talks about her relationship with a couple of actors from the time. Like, Charlie Chaplin's son and then like another Hollywood person. But I'm like, did she actually know these people? Or is this just something that Joyce Carol Oates made
See, that
up
makes
just
me nervous. Like, and I've read a lot of books on Marilyn Monroe too. Me
too.
She's a fascinating character.
I mean, she's a, yeah. She was an actual person. Well, but yeah.
And she's still popular to this day.
Right. There aren't a whole lot of actors from that era that have, although they've got that Cary Grant miniseries that just came out with Jason Isaacs.
Okay, so here's the thing. Is it only available on that?
I think so. I think it's one of those streaming miniseries.
Because the last thing I knew was only available on this, like, BritBox, which is like a UK streaming service. I was going to get BritBox just for that.
I mean, you could always just briefly get it. You're not getting married to BritBox.
Do you know what his real name is?
I did at one time, but I have...
Archibald Leach.
There we go.
Very similar to my maiden name, Leach. But I'm the Scottish version, L-E-I-T-C-H, and he's the English version, L-E-A-C-H.
Listen.
I know. It was a little trivia for you.
There we go. If you ever wonder to yourself, what is it that Amanda has in common with Cary Grant? Now you know.
We were just the same, but yet different. Well, he's an interesting character, too.
Also a person.
He's also a person. What other books are coming out that are good?
I'm... very disappointed that the latest Simone St. James novel, Murder Road, has been checked out before I could get my hands on it. I'm looking forward to being underwhelmed by that book.
Which book?
The author's name is Simone St. James, and she does this. All of her books are this sort of beautiful intersplicing of horror and mysteries. Yeah. Like, she does a lot of supernatural mystery type stuff. My favorite of hers is something I'm not going to be able to come up with. Something about a hotel.
Ooh.
I really loved that one book and have been sort of like vaguely enjoying other stuff she's written. But she has one that just came out and it's got a bunch of holds on it. So I'll probably have to wait.
There's so many good books out there. They're coming out left and right.
Yeah, there's not enough time in the world.
And I do, when I go my walks, I do.
Oh, and Tana French too. She's a big mystery writer who just has a new one that came out. Hers are funky. Like, mistaken identities, and like they're like, it turns out that there's some personal meaning to each, because all of her books the detective changes for each one, and then it turns out that the mystery has some significance to, like, there's one called The Likeness where it turns out that the detective is like pretty much the doppelganger of the woman who actually was killed.
Really?
And so she like goes back and pretends to be her to see like if anybody, it's a very
good
Glass Onion kind of situation.
Yeah.
Sorry if I spoiled the Glass Onion for anybody. But yeah, it's enjoyable.
This is like a dangerous conversation.
How so?
Because it's like, there's so many books I want to read.
Of all the dangers that you could be encountering in this world, having more books that you want to read is not the worst of
them. It's just, there's so many good books out there and I love reading.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is listening to this right now? Like,
I know.
I'm hoping that the majority of them are people who generally enjoy reading. It's okay if you don't. No judgment there.
No judgment.
Seriously, I feel like you're not in any risk at this point.
Okay. So
we should probably finish up, though.
Okay. Well, I got to say is that I love the library. I've been using libraries since I was little, and they are... I look at books like candy. Just delicious and wonderful. And
where are you vacationing? Total left turn.
New York City. We're staying in Brooklyn.
Not been there
I've
before?
I've never been there.
Okay.
I want to see the Brooklyn Bridge, and I want to go to a bunch of cool restaurants.
Yes. Do some really snobby, this is my favorite, obscure,
we're going
Southern African restaurant here.
We're going to plant-based places.
Okay.
Like raw vegan.
That should get you going right there.
And
I'd
like,
say.
So my husband and son will go, okay, here, people, I know you didn't know this. There's three meals in a day. So
Do tell.
So one of those meals is going to be plant-based. So they're
not bad.
I'm going to haul them to like the place.
If you find really good places, like,
you know,
vegan places, they can disguise it so
stealthily.
I know.
I've been stalking these places. Yes. Like, I know the menus, the prices. I'm so excited.
Okay. I'm looking forward to hearing about it and being jealous when you get back.
I know.
Okay. Thank you so much for letting me not kidnap you.
Just glad that I had this time to come talk about books and...
Yeah.
Everything else we discussed.
Tell Kate hello. All right. Take care. Have a good trip.